Hey, everybody. Welcome into the podcast. We are back with another special bonus episode. And we are once again returning to the well, Brad, for our top fives series. I'm excited about this one today. You know, we've done a couple animated movies top fives, but it's been a while, and I think we're putting a kind of unique spin on it today.
Yeah, today we are bringing you our top five films not animated by the soul-sucking conglomerate that is Disney.
I wonder if I could fit all that in an episode title, like just exactly how you described it.
It'll look great on Instagram.
I think so, too. Yeah, we're doing our top five non-Disney animated movies today. Brad, we try to do at least, I'd say, three to four animated movies every season. I'm really glad that we do. It really helps kind of break up some of the heavier, more dramatic, and sometimes really long movies that we watch for this show. So animated movies are always welcome here.
There's a running trope in my home that, and I'm quoting my wife specifically on this, Bob picks the worst movies. And usually that is followed up with, why are they so stinking long? So, animated films are a huge hit here in the G household when it comes to the podcast.
You know, you've mentioned on two consecutive episodes that we've recorded today, Brad, that your wife says this about. So I have to imagine it is both a very frequent thing that she says and that it must have happened very, very recently.
Yeah, I was actually describing The Hunchback of Notre Dame to her, and she was like, why does Bob pick the worst movies?
Well, at least it's not long.
Yeah, at the very least, this one wasn't long. Usually what'll happen is it'll be like late at night and I'm like, she's like heading to bed. I'm like, I'm just going to go watch this movie for the podcast. And she's like, oh, what is it? And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, such and such film. How long is it? Oh, you know, 2 hours and 48 minutes. Ugh, why does Bob pick the worst movies?
All right, man. So we're gonna try to keep it to short movies today. And they're non-Disney animated movies, as we've said. We're also going to be sipping on three whiskeys from a distillery that we've been trying to get on the show for probably over a year now. I've been working with them, and we finally were able to get some samples. I cannot wait to try these three whiskeys from Starlight Distillery in Indiana.
Honestly, Bob, their name sounds like a non-Disney animation studio. Like, couldn't Starlight. You see Starlight Animation?
Yeah, I imagine it being like a like an animated version of E.T. or something.
Yeah. All right, man. They focus on sci-fi movies.
Exactly. Brad, I think we've dilly-dallied already enough. Why don't we jump right into our top fives? Because we have a lot to get through today. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, my number five movie for top non-Disney animated films is a movie, Bob, that I have almost zero memory of. I literally can't think of almost anything that happens in the movie, but I know for a fact that I just loved this movie as a kid. I'm talking about Land Before Time, made by Amblin Animation Studios.
There it is. I loved the Land Before Time when I was a kid. I never got into like
about it.
I remember a ton about it. I don't remember like any of the sequels. And then they got to the point where they were making like Land Before Time 25. And like, no exaggeration. It was like, there's as many Land Before Times as there are like, that's what I call music CDs from back in the 90s. Like,
yeah, they or just like Tyler Perry's Madea family.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure there's been a Madea and Land Before Time crossover at this point.
I mean, why not?
Land Before Time was such a good movie. I remember, you know, Littlefoot and them trying to get away from Sharptooth, the T-Rex. I remember the big pointy star. I remember a very tragic, very haunting maternal death in that movie that rivals Bambi for me. Yeah, man. Wow. It's been so long since I've seen that movie. I wonder if it holds up.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you remember as much about it as you do. Because, like I said, I just remember the fact that I loved it. And I have, like, vague, like, movie stills in my mind from that movie.
I'll tell you what, man. It was hard to identify five non-Disney movies that I was really passionate about. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's a decent-sized list. I guess, you know, since we're already into it. I'm not a fan of like Japanese anime. I've never found the one for me. So like we could have done a whole bunch of, you know, Studio Ghibli, Hayao Miyazaki movies We could have even done like ones for adults, like Akira or something, but that's just not my genre. And so I'm really sticking with your kind of traditional made for children, American style animation here. And it's hard to not trip over a Disney movie.
For all of my friends out there who are into anime, I'm going to recommend an anime show to you, Bob. Are you ready?
Yes.
It's called One Punch Man.
Oh, you've told me about this before.
The whole idea of the show is that he has become so powerful, he can destroy anything in one punch.
Yeah.
And so the whole philosophy of the show is like, what do you do if you are the most powerful hero of all time? It's a question, highly amusing.
It's a question I deal with every day, Brad.
Yeah. How do we deal with being the most powerful podcast of all time?
Exactly. All right. For my number five, I'm going to go a little non-traditional. I'm going to go with a movie that's actually a stop motion animation. And it's from one of my favorite directors and somebody that's been on this podcast before, Wes Anderson. And I'm going to go with Fantastic Mr. Fox. This was a movie that he did back in, I think, 2008, and it is just absolutely freaking delightful. It's so funny. George Clooney plays the title character. He's a swindler. It's based on a Roald Dahl book. Like, it's just, it's so good. My wife and I just rewatched it. We went through all of Wes Anderson's movies, and we decided to do the two animated movies that he's done as well. And I gotta say, like, the first time I saw Fantastic Mr. Fox, I was not a huge fan. I hadn't really developed an appreciation for Wes Anderson films yet. This time around, I mean, it's just such a feel-good movie. And at the end of the day, that's what I'm looking for in movies like this. So my number five, Wes Anderson's Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I'm actually going to throw a honorable mention out there for another movie that I don't have a lot of memory of. Wallace and Gromit, A Grand Day Out.
Oh, yeah.
When they go to the moon. Listen, I remember loving that movie as a kid.
Stop motion is such a cool medium, but I feel like, and this is a problem with me, not with stop motion, but I feel like I've really got to be hooked by the story to make it through a full movie of it, because it is kind of like, you know, herky jerky sometimes. And it's just like, it takes a lot of attention to be able to sit and like give yourself over to a movie like that. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, totally. It's so far out there from what normal animation looks like that, no, dude, you totally have to be invested if you're really going to spend your time doing it. Otherwise, you'll end up like Ben does in Parks and Rec.
In Parks and Rec. Requiem for a Tuesday. That's my favorite short film ever.
That's
made. All
I made?
I just love the meme that's come from that, of him holding that doll and just saying, could a depressed person make this? Also a question, man. I ask myself every day.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Bob, my number four movie is Osmosis Jones.
Is it really?
I literally watched this movie. I was supposed to watch, like, I don't know, Silence of the Lambs, whenever we're doing that. And instead, I was like, you know what I'm going to watch? I'm going to watch Osmosis Jones.
A film in which, if I remember correctly, real life Bill Murray gets very sick. And inside Bill Murray, is it Chris Rock? Is it Eddie Murphy? Like, who's playing Osmosis Jones?
I think it's Chris Rock. It's got Lawrence Fishburne. It's got Bill Murray live and in the flesh, eating literally food that has fallen in a cage of like zoo animal poop.
Yeah.
Not for me. Wild animated. I mean, I guess it is an animated crossover film. So I don't know if it's fully just an animated film. Dude, it is so freaking funny. I was laughing so hard the entire time. It's not a good movie. It's not well made, but it's one of the funniest animated films I've ever seen. And I enjoyed it enough to put it on this list.
All right. So for my number four, I'm actually kind of in the same ballpark as you if we're talking about people eating things. I'm going with a movie that was made by the directors Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who have gone on to make some really, really huge movies in the last 10 years. This was one of their first efforts. It's called Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. It's an adaptation of a children's book, and it really kind of solidified their signature style, which is, if I'm being honest, kind of hit or miss for me, Brad. I don't know if you've seen any Lord and Miller movies, but like their trademark is I'm going to throw so much at you, both visually and in terms of like volume of jokes, that I trust that like 60% of them will stick and you'll remember a lot of it and then you'll be entertained. It's just like complete overload. And so they, you know, a few years after this, they did the Lego movie and they did the second Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie. They've done a couple live action films, 21 Jump Street and its sequel. Then they ended up producing Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is a movie that a lot of people love. And for me, I felt like that was the closest I ever got to like having a seizure from flashing lights in a movie theater. I walked out of that movie and I felt like nauseous. It was too much for me. But with Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the visuals are just gorgeous. And I think if there is an area where they like try to go overboard, it's just in having like mile a minute dialogue and 10 jokes a minute. And like, do all of them work? No. But it is so ridiculously silly that I'm like giddy when I watch that movie. It's so much fun. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have not.
Oh my gosh, dude. It's like I said, it's almost like one of those things where if you watch it like in 20 minute chunks, it's almost better because it really is just like visual overload and joke overload. But at the end of the day, like what works really, really well. So that's my number four.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I think that'll be a fun one to watch.
All right, man. What do you say we take a break here? Let's try the first of these three Starlight whiskeys. I say that we start with the rye. This is called Huber's Old Rickhouse Indiana Straight Rye Whiskey. Brad, it looks like this one is actually coming in around cask strength. It's at 111.5 proof. It's aged for 4 years. And all of Starlight's whiskeys are distilled, aged, bottled on site. So this is not an MGP thing at all.
Indiana whiskey that's not from MGP?
I know. How do they do it? Yeah, so so from what I understand, Starlight Distillery is part of this farm called Huber's, which was basically a vineyard for a long time. And then they decided that they should start making brandy. So they brought in some pot stills. And once the whiskey world kind of exploded, they were like, hey, why not? Let's give it a try. And they've been slowly working their way up through the whiskey world. Their stuff went from being 2 years old to 4 years old, very similar to what we're seeing from a lot of small craft distillers. And some of their higher end products, Brad, I'm starting to see on like year end lists of best whiskeys in America. So this is a company that's really been on my radar. I'm really excited to get into this 4 year rye. It smells delicious.
Yeah, it has all of the spiciness you want from a rye with a little bit of like a soft fruity tone to it that kind of reminds me of pear. I love the nose on this. And then when I got into the actual palate and finish, Bob, this is an incredible rye whiskey that you're getting out at 4 years. I was really blown away with how tasty this is.
Wow, this is fantastic. I'm just drinking it live now. You're right. I think pear was a really good note on the nose. I think that the rye is just young enough that you still get a little bit of kind of like a raw, grainy scent to the nose. But it almost smells like if you took a rye and you just mixed it with like a classic bourbon caramel. Like it has some great, dark, sweet bourbon-y notes on it as well. And that's all there on the palate. It's nice and spicy. There's just a little bit of that kind of like tannic quality to it. Man, this is such a good rye at only 4 years.
Yeah, Starlight, holy crap. Like, this is a bottle I would buy in a heartbeat, just instantly.
Announce yourself to the Film and Whiskey podcast.
Yeah, for real. I am highly impressed and super thankful that we got to try this one.
So let me ask you this, Brad. Do you think that this works at the proof point? Would you prefer it higher or lower? Or, you know, is it in the right spot?
Honestly, I don't need it any higher.
Mm-hmm.
This might sound a little blasphemous, but I think sometimes bourbon, it uses proof as a crutch point. Like, It almost needs to be higher proofed to bring out a lot of the flavor that you're looking for in bourbon. Whereas this one, I don't need any more proof. I have everything I need in the flavor profile here. And it's not blasting me out of the water on proof. I'm happy.
All right, Brett, it looks like retail on this is about $55. At least that's what I'm seeing on some websites that picked their own barrel of this and are selling it. So it might honestly be a couple dollars less than that if you're just getting it off the shelf at a liquor store. I think for $55, especially coming from a small craft distiller, this is a phenomenal value.
Yeah, really a spectacular value coming out of a state that isn't known for its unique whiskeys. So go buy yourself a bottle of this Old Huber rye whiskey as soon as you can.
All right, Brad, let's get back into our top fives. You want to hit us with your number three pick?
My number three pick is coming out of the Illumination Studios. It is Despicable Me.
Oh, interesting. You're going with the Minions, huh?
I am not going with the Minions. I am going with Steve Carell having one of the most beautifully fun and touching relationships with three little orphan girls that you could ever imagine. Mm.
Out of all the films dealing with touching relationships with orphan girls, this is most Steve Carell.
Yeah, it's the one, man.
All right, so is that what hooks you with this movie?
Yeah, I think that the way you watch Gru, the main villain of the movie, transform through his relationship with these girls, it's just so touching. It feels weirdly down to earth, and I really like it. And I will say that in this movie, before Minions became the cash grab that they now are, I actually enjoyed the Minions in this movie. They were amusing. They brought a level of humor to the movie that I thought was unique in the world of child entertainment. So I enjoy the Minions in this movie. I think they're funny. But it's really that those three little kids are so cute and so funny. I really love the way this film brings it about. I know that you are not a big Despicable Me fan, though.
But here's the thing is, I don't know if I've ever sat down and watched it front to back. I think it's one of those things where the culture got so saturated with Despicable Me stuff. And also, if you remember, like right around the time Despicable Me came out, they started releasing the Hotel Transylvania movies.
Yeah.
And they've done like four of each of those franchises. And I think my mind is just so worn out with both of those franchises that I've just kind of like formed this amalgam of like non-Disney movies that I hate. And it's just like both of them are in that and unfairly so, because I don't know that I've ever given it a fair shake. I think based on your recommendation, I might have to go subject myself to some Minions here.
Yeah, do it, man. As long as it's not the Minions movie, just watch Despicable Me, the original, the one that started it all.
All right, so for my number three, I'm also doing a movie that launched a few sequels. It's a DreamWorks animated film, Kung Fu Panda. Now, this was a movie that, you know, again, on paper, really silly. It's a Jack Black voiced panda doing kung fu. Like, what more do you need? The fat jokes abound.
Legend tells of a legendary warrior whose kung fu skills were the stuff of legend. He traveled the land in search of worthy foes. I see you like to chew. Maybe you should chew on my fist! The warrior said nothing, for his mouth was full. Then he swallowed. And then he spoke. Enough talk. Let's fight.
But what I was really blown away by was the level, like the depth of the relationships in this movie, especially between Poe, the main panda, and his family. Really, really strong emotional moments in this movie. And this was also one of the first times where I was truly taken aback at how well other studios besides Pixar had figured out how to do computer animation, especially like some of the moments where, you know, characters are in flight and you see like this beautiful sky. A lot of the wide establishing like landscape shots in this movie are just breathtaking. And of course, now I think it's been like 13 or 14 years since that movie came out. And it's like, all right, well, we've improved even from there. But this was the first time that I felt like DreamWorks was really doing something on the level of Pixar. And so it's always stuck with me. I really, really love this movie. Kung Fu Panda is my number three.
You would say that this was the first time DreamWorks was doing something on the level of Pixar?
Well, the first time that I really found it noticeable, like, you got to remember too, like, around this time, Pixar had just done Ratatouille. They had just done WALL-E, and like WALL-E, yeah. You know, with Ratatouille, it was like, wow, you've really gotten like skin textures and like, you know, fur down. And then WALL-E came out and it was like, oh my gosh, you're animating like dust particles at a level that no one's ever done this. And so,
yeah.
You know, Kung Fu Panda comes out right around that same time. And I'm like, you know, it might not be WALL-E, but it's like, it's darn close. And so I felt like, you know, if nothing else, the gap had been shortened lessened. A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I'm just going to say it. Nobody can animate like Pixar. Like,
no.
Like Disney can't animate like Pixar, DreamWorks. I don't care who it is. They have some sort of black magic that they do over there.
The alchemy, right?
It is. I mean, dude, they're one short about the little Piper birds. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Piper.
Piper.
Bro, it is just mind-boggling how they animate that stuff.
All right, man, we got to drink a second whiskey. I say we go for the baseline bourbon this time. This is called Carl T. Huber's Indiana Straight Bourbon Whiskey. What do you say, Brad?
Let's get to it.
All right, so this is Starlight's signature whiskey. It clocks in at 92 proof and 4 years of age. Brad, this, you know what? Like, every once in a while, I just like drinking a no-nonsense, no-frills baseline bourbon.
Yeah, I mean, we've just gotten into so many different whiskeys over the last almost 3 years now of the podcast that sometimes we do kind of miss out on, like, hey, here's just normal whiskey. Drink mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of, I think this is like, this perfectly fits that mold, right?
Yeah, Bob, everything about this whiskey, I don't know how to say this. I need whiskey in my life that just ranks like a 7 out of 10 in every category. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I feel like those are the whiskeys that like the whole is greater than the sum of its parts kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Like if each category is a 7, then the whiskey overall ends up being like an 8.5. You know what I mean?
Yep. And that's kind of where I'm at with this. It is pleasantly sweet. It's not overpowering. It's a little bit grainy, but mm-hmm. not in such a way that it sours my palate. I mean, every little bit from nose to finish of this experience, I'm just sitting here going, man, this is just a really nice, smooth whiskey. I don't think it should be any higher than 92 proof. I really like this, Bob.
I do wish this was aged for maybe one more year, Brad. I'm with you because, you know, when I first took a nose, you know, like a nosing of this, I couldn't tell if there was just like something residually left on my palate from the rye we just had, but it was a little grainy and it smelled just a little young. And it was like just a wisp of that because the predominant note I got on this was peanut butter. Really, really nice peanut buttery nose here with like an undercurrent of like a young rye. And so I was like, oh, maybe I'm remembering something or it's just still in my brain. But when I take a sip, those are the two notes as well. It's really, really drinkable. Like it goes down like water compared to some of the ones we've had on this show. But again, it's like it's peanut buttery, nice, round, well-aged bourbon notes. And then it's undercut with like some real young graininess. I assume they're blending this, you know, from a variety of barrels. I wonder if this was just a little bit older, if that little tinge of youth would come out of it. But as it stands, man, this is really, really good. And it's $35 for a bottle of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you can't get that much better. Like, or you can't get much better than that from a craft distiller.
Yeah. I mean, based on my expert whiskey palate, I think if you age this 4.278 months, it would be just perfect.
Mm. Well, listen, I think that this really sets us up well for the last whiskey that we're going to try today, and we'll get to that after our number two picks. So, Brad, why don't you reveal number two?
Number two. I'm going to be jumping into the DreamWorks animation studio for my final two films. First up, though, at number two is How to Train Your Dragon. Bro, this movie in 2010, I literally don't know what to say about it. It's one of the best movies of all time. Like,
it's like, so well made.
It's like, just so incredibly well made. The pacing of the movie is just spot on at every single moment. The band of unlikely heroes just fits the mold so perfectly well. It's epic when it needs to. It's up close and personal at the most tender of moments. I love How to Train Your Dragon. I was literally just like reorganizing my DVDs and Blu-rays, and I saw that I have How to Train Your Dragon 1 and 2, and I was like, man, I need to put those back in and watch them, because not only is the first one spectacular, the second one is amazing as well.
Mm-hmm. And the third one is quite good, too. Like, it's not up to the par of the first two, but like, if we're talking about trilogies that don't have a bummer of an ending in terms of quality, like, How to Train Your Dragon has a pretty good third chapter.
Yeah, I honestly haven't seen it, but yeah, it's good. We'll fix that at some point.
You really need to. Brad, my number two movie also comes from the DreamWorks Animation Studios, and it is a little film called How to Train Your Dragon.
Hey, yeah. Dude, I've never heard of it.
I love this movie, man. Is it good? I'm excited we get to talk about it for like 30 more seconds, because you know me, you know my father-son relationships in movies, always touching a chord. I gotta say, man, when we started this podcast, I did not realize how much I was moved by those kinds of stories in films, and B, did not realize the sheer number of movies that the whole plot hinges on father-son relationships. Like,
yeah,
I guess for the last 100 years, the men of the world have really been grappling with their relationships with their fathers. And that's what cinema is all about.
Wake up. I'm sorry. For everything.
Yeah, me too.
You don't have to go up there.
We're Vikings. It's an occupational hazard.
I'm proud to call you my son.
Thanks, Dad.
We haven't done any foreign films, so it seems like American culture is struggling a little bit.
Yeah, man, I'm so happy that we both put How to Train Your Dragon at number two. You're going to be incredibly pissed at me for my number one pick. So before we get to that, I say we drink a little bit more whiskey. And we're going to finish out today's lineup from Starlight with Carl T. Huber's single barrel bourbon finished in sherry barrels. I am super duper pumped for a 107 proof, 4.5 year aged bourbon. Brad, the color on this is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, man, this just has this gorgeous caramely amber note to it that, it just looks amazing. I will say, though, I don't smell anything on the nose.
Like, you don't smell anything?
I don't smell anything on this nose. Like, there's the tiniest hint of grape. And other than that, I'm not getting anything.
You know what? You're right. For me, it's a little bit of like a dusty, like mustiness to this, but it doesn't really take on like a bourbon character. So this is finished in Oloroso sherry barrels, which we have had plenty of on the show. But you're right. I feel like the sherry may be kind of undercutting the natural kind of bourbon notes. It definitely doesn't have that sort of peanut buttery note that we got from the standard bourbon. All right, Brad, I think that on the flavor, this actually kind of picks up a little bit. It definitely does tamp down some of the sweeter, more caramely things that are going on, but I do get that sherry flavor. And you're right, it does come across almost as a winey character on this. I think I said that it has a little bit of a mustiness to it. It doesn't quite tip into like the Willet funk, but it's like it's almost there. It's like a dusty kind of... Like it tastes like it's been stored in the rickhouse for a long time and forgotten about in the back and collected dust. And I don't know. I like it, but I can see where you're coming from, where you talk about it being kind of muted as well.
Yeah, that's honestly just about the only word I can use. It feels a little muted to me on the flavors. There's a little bit of that nice, musty grape to it. I'm not getting enough of the bourbon notes to really enjoy it. It reminds me a little bit of the, what was the cab finished? Something Hill.
Oh, the Pritchard Hill from Jefferson's?
Yes, yeah. Pritchard Hill. Thank you. It reminds me a little bit of Pritchard Hill, where I just felt like the finishing in a wine barrel almost muted everything I loved about the whiskey. So, unfortunately, this is the only one that I'm a little bit lower on, which is disappointing because, hot damn, bro, the rye and their just their classic bourbon offering, I am 200% sold on.
All right, so if you had to rank these 1 through 3,
rye, bourbon, sherry,
I would go rye, sherry, bourbon, probably. I think the rye is like a no-brainer recommendation for me.
Yep.
And then the other two, it's kind of like, I would still recommend either of them, but it's more like a take your pick. Like if you are really into the idea of a lower proof whiskey or a lower proof bourbon that's going to hit all the right notes, go with that. If you want something finished, I would say go with the sherry. I like the sherry, and I think I like it a little bit more than you. On the second or third sip, I'm really getting a lot of nice vanilla. So yeah, man, I would give all three of these a thumbs up, but a definite 2 thumbs up to that rye.
Yeah, Bob, I think that Starlight is putting out some phenomenal whiskeys. Even if I am a little bit lower on the sherry finish, Bob, it's still a good whiskey.
For sure.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend anything otherwise. So guys, if you can find yourself some Starlight, go out and get it. We are so grateful that they sent us these samples with no strings attached. We are just incredibly blessed to be able to try these whiskeys and give you our recommendation.
You know, the fact that you said no strings attached means that everyone listening now is like, there's got to be string attached now.
Oh, they paid us so much.
As soon as you said it, they were
money.
Like, these guys are on the take.
Yeah, they paid us tens of dollars to give that review.
Oh, man. All right, Brad, let's reveal our number one film. And I'm going to go first because you're not going to like my choice.
I already know what you're choosing, Bob.
What am I choosing?
Just go ahead and say it.
No, I want you to tell me.
No, you just say it, Bob.
About. All right. I'm going with a movie that you gave a nice 6 out of 10 to. I'm going with The Iron Giant.
Obviously.
Brad, this movie is so good, and I have truly racked my brain thinking about, like, how did this movie not work for you? Because I feel like it checks every single box that it should for you. Like, it's not a long movie. It's set in the 1950s. It has like an Indiana Jones kind of vibe to it. It has sci-fi elements. It has sacrifice. Like, it's a perfect coming of age story. Now, like, again, as we've gone through the podcast and I've seen your reaction to multiple coming of age movies, including E.T., which this is very similar to.
I also gave a 6 out of 10.
Again,
too.
I can at least understand that you're going to give the movies like this a 6 out of 10. But Brad, I think this is like a nearly perfect movie, and I will never be able to wrap my mind around how you didn't enjoy this movie.
It just didn't flow well. There was just something about The Iron Giant that just it didn't hit the right notes at the right times. Now, I'll give you, man, when he flies up there and he dies to the nuclear bomb that he was meant to bring to Earth, like, yeah, sure, you know, it was a very nice sacrifice. I just didn't enjoy the movie, man.
Quick story for Film and Whiskey listeners. Back when we were doing these reviews, I think Iron Giant was season 1. And we had
it was 2 or 3, man.
Was it really? Was it that far on?
Yeah, I think it was.
All right. So we'll say season 2, just for the sake of the story. We had very few listeners at the time The Iron Giant rolled around. And I remember making a post about it on Instagram. And a guy who worked in like really high up in the animation department on The Iron Giant, like saw all of our posts, commented, said like, man, working on this movie was like the joy of my life. And was like engaging with us on social media, and then we dropped the episode. Brad just shit on this guy's movie for an hour. So yeah, I was really hoping that Brad would come around on Iron Giant so we could be interviewing this guy on our show, but alas, it didn't flow for him.
It sure didn't, man.
All right, man, why don't you reveal your number one?
There's only one choice when it comes to non-Disney animated films, and it's The Prince of Freakin' Egypt.
That is the correct title, right?
The official title.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, The Prince of Egypt hit. You want to talk about a movie that checks all the boxes? The Prince of Egypt checks all the boxes. Phenomenal voice performances, check. Beautiful animation, check. Absolutely phenomenal cinematography for an animated film, check. Like, the soundtrack for that movie is out of this world. Every single piece of this movie is nearly perfect to perfect. I know that, like, there's not a massive contingent of people who love this movie. I'm sure that not everybody saw it when it came out in, I believe, 98, 99. But if you haven't seen The Prince of Egypt, you need to stop what you're doing and go watch it right now. Because we just talked about The Hunchback of Notre Dame and how, like, epic it was and how it tries to be epic over and over and over again. This movie just casually is epic in every single moment. And it's so good.
Well, you'll have a chance to watch it as we get closer to viewing it for season 5, because it's coming up at some point. We don't know when yet, because we really truly are drawing these movies at random this year. So we don't know when Prince of Egypt is, except for Spider-Man, which was a shameless cash grab, just like No Way Home. But but I digress. So all right. So those,
Bob, as you were scouring the internet for non-Disney animated films, I have, like, one movie that ended up on every list that I just think is a garbage movie. And it's I don't even know the full name, the Fern Gully, the Fairies of Fern Gully. Is that what it's called?
I have never watched Fern Gully, and I never will.
Right?
There's so, like, many things in life that I need to see that aren't Fern Gully. Like, no, I'm good. I'm good.
So many people love that movie, and I don't get it.
Cool. You know, good for them. That's where you just say, like, hey, be blessed. Enjoy your life. Man. Yeah. All right. So those are our top fives. We want to know what you think, though. Who had the better list? What did we leave off? What's a movie that's a non-Disney animated film that you love? You can find us on our social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Film Whiskey.
Or you can jump on our Discord. We have constant conversations with our fans talking about absolutely anything under the sun. So go join our Discord. Or if you love what we're doing here on the podcast, jump on our Patreon. It's patreon.com/filmwhiskey. Go ahead and support us. And every little penny just helps make it a little easier to do.
All right. We'll be back on Monday with another regularly scheduled episode. But until then, I'm Bob Book.
I'm Brad G.
And we'll see you next time.